Welcome to The Life of Caesar, episode whatever we're up to, because as I was just explaining to Ray, I tend to get it wrong too often. I'll be editing and go, what? I said it was 30? It's actually 37. What am I doing? And then I get confused. Hey, Ray.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Now, as we have recently learned, a couple of things we've recently learned. Hmm? One is that we cannot say Ave when we're talking to the audience.
No.
As I posted on Facebook, but I'll read it out for those of you who still, despite us begging, pleading, cajoling, insulting, still aren't on Facebook. We got an email the other day from a lady, Xinong Wang, and I called her sir by mistake because I didn't know Xinong, and she replied back saying, well, actually, I'm a ma'am, not a sir. Xinong Wang sent us an email a couple of days ago saying, Salvete, Ray and Kem, for listening to the latest episode. I felt like sending you guys an email to say, as someone who would definitely count as one of your young listeners being in my last year of high school, that I love your podcast. In fact, I'm very grateful to you. After listening to your podcast, I was able to answer a bonus question about the role of dictators and get an extra 2 marks in my Latin exam last year. Multas gratias vobis ago. I'd like to say, as a Latin student, who the hell studies Latin is the first thing I want to know. Your recent discussion about Latin profanity and body parts had me in tears of laughter, though, of course, as a young listener, I was duly mortified at the impropriety.
As well you should.
Yeah. Also, I must say, as a younger person who hasn't decided on a position to adopt in politics yet, I enjoy listening to Cam's world views. Well, thank you, Xinong. Now, she says, a point I want to quickly mention, though, the greeting you guys are using, Ave, is technically the singular form, which would be used if you were greeting one person. So you say Ave to me, I say Ave to you. That's all good. For greeting more than one, or in your case, a crowd of millions and millions of very satisfied listeners, I might have added that bit in. It would be grammatically correct to say Avete, like salve, the greeting we were taught to use becomes salvete when addressing more than one person, or veil becomes valete. Now, feel free to take that information and shove it wherever you like, she says. Very, very ladylike.
What a lady,
Xinong.
Yeah.
Cure ut valiatus valete. And then she replied to me again saying she's a lady. I'm a lady.
Yeah. Well, who is it? In my defense, every time I said it, I was only talking to Cam and no one else. So technically, I was correct.
That's true. But you do say Ave, everybody.
Crap. Okay.
Yeah, you do say that a lot.
I don't know whose side you're on, Cam. It's not mine.
No, I'm on Xinong's side, man. She says she's been taking notes for a history extension project on Caesar's civil wars, and you guys are so helpfully opinionated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then she's not too sure what Cliff's notes are for Americans. But if it's anything like Spark Notes, it's probably saved the lives of many, many students who are too lazy to read what the teachers gave them. Yes, it is like Spark Notes.
Exactly.
So congratulations. She said it's great. Anyway, thank you, Xinong Wang, for that wonderful email. Love getting email from the younger listeners.
Yeah. Because they'll rule the world one day, and they'll listen to us.
But that's right. We are shaping the minds
of
future leaders. Actually, you know, when Chrissy and I were in Paris, just after we met in 2008, we went to Paris with David Markham, and a young 17, I think he was 17, might have even been 16, I think he was 17, kid from Philly turned up called Nicholas Stark, and really sort of nerdy, geeky 17, came by himself to Paris from Philadelphia to hang out with us for a couple of days in Paris. Ooh. And he has gone on to become one of the great intellects. Like, this is 6 years later. He's in his mid-20s, early to mid-20s, 23, 24, 25. He's doing PhDs in history. He's been on the show, the Napoleon Show, a couple of times. Absolutely mind-blowing guy, Nicholas. Yeah. We consider him a great friend. But, yeah, he was, you know, everything he has now he owes to the Napoleon podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. At least 20%.
I tell him when he runs the world, when he becomes president of the United Nations.
Right.
Or
the overlord. Yeah.
The overlord. Yeah. I want a global free parking pass so I can park anywhere.
I like that. I like that. You always think big. I respect that.
So, Shinong, tell us, send us another email. Tell us why the hell you're studying Latin. That's really what I know.
Yes.
We got another great email I'm going to read before we get into the thing this morning. From Stephen Hudak. Mm-hmm. Hudak. That's Stephen. Hudak there? That's Stephen. He says, it makes me upset to hear people ripping on Ray. I believe someone called him spineless for not being more opinionated. I would respond that the lack of constant injection of personal opinion is a reflection of self-confidence and broader perspective. Fuck that guy.
You were still quoting at the end, right?
I was.
Okay, yeah. Now, yeah. I mean, I was born and raised a Southern gentleman. I don't feel the need to correct or you know, override anybody. I have my opinion. Someone else has theirs. The world somehow still turns around. So, you know. That's just who I am.
Where's the fun in that, Ray?
Manners. We were taught in the South. Manners are the most important thing. Yes, I know that's bullshit, but that's what we were taught.
You know why they taught you that? So you'd sit down, shut the fuck up, and not argue.
Well, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. I was raised in country Queensland. I was taught there are three things you don't talk about at the dinner table: religion, politics, and sex.
Right.
And I got to a certain age thinking, well, what is there worth talking about except for politics, religion, and
sex?
Right.
There is nothing else. Yeah.
That's what makes the world go round. Thank you, Stephen, for that. Now, I want to start this episode 30, Ray, by thanking. I thought we should thank suffering fuckatash, Ray. I thought we should thank our patrons.
Yeah, yeah.
Up the front. So because, you know, really, as we get busier and busier and we've got Alexander and you're still doing some war that happened, I don't know when it was.
I don't know.
It's harder and harder for us to find the time to do these things, kids. But, you know, honestly, what keeps us going, apart from the fact that we like talking to each other, is patrons, financial supporters who throw us a few bucks, and that justifies the genuinely huge amount of time that we put into these things. Yeah. You know, it's not just the research and the recording, it's the editing, it's the tech support, it's the emails, it's the questions, it's running the website, it's designing stuff, it's making t-shirts and commissioning artists to do stuff for coffee mugs. It's you know, it's a full-time job in itself, and we don't get paid anywhere near a full-time salary out of it.
What we think we're worth. Oh, and just to let everybody know, Jessica, our resident artist, our artist in resident, whatever, is working on one. I'm trying to come up with one for about Caesar and the Pirates. So be looking for that soon. So again, Cam's point is we're always working. We're always doing something.
You wish Jessica was in residence. That's what I was going to say. What do they call that? Like a house girl.
Oh, my God. La 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 la.
I don't know if you and Heather are into that kind of thing, but
I'll go ask her as soon as we're done here.
Yeah, I think Jessica's coming to Rome, so we'll find out then.
That's right. That's right.
What do you call a fivesome?
Oh, complicated.
Menage a cinque. Menage a cinque.
I don't know. There's bound to be mistakes made.
Swords crossed.
Just keep the lights out and everything will be fine.
So the patrons. Patrons.
Yeah, patrons, yes.
The patrons that are bringing you this episode, episode number 30 of Life of Caesar, the people that have put their hands in their pockets and gone, you know what, these guys work hard. They deserve it. And they've not just for this show, they've worked hard for years and years and years producing amazingly entertaining free content for us. They deserve a few bucks. This week, Anthony Mishler, David Jasek, Peter Ryan, Gregory Wernicke, Jeffrey Strenkovsky, Steve Walton, and Brendan Bateman. Thank you, everybody. Steve Walton, I also want to shout out, or Herbert Steve Walton, as he's known to his mum and dad, also became a Diadoke patron of Life of Alexander this week.
Thank you.
Top level. So thank you very much, Steve Walton, or John Boy, as I'm going to refer to him.
Yeah.
John Boy from the Waltons.
He's had to have heard that before.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think, well, I don't know how many people even remember the Waltons, man. I don't know if it's still showing in reruns
actually,
on the US, but.
The person who wrote that lived 30 minutes from where I live.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've 30 been by minutes the from the middle yeah. of fucking nowhere, really.
Oh, ouch. Unnecessarily harsh. But anyway, it's true. I've been to the museum there.
They have a museum for the Waltons?
Yeah, it's kind of tiny and basic, but it's quaint. It's cute, especially if you like the show.
I did. I grew up watching that show. I loved it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
That charm boy. All right. Thank you to all those people. Now, we finished episode 29.
Did.
With the pardon of Corfinium.
Mm-hmm.
Famous pardon where Caesar has basically shocked all of Rome
mm-hmm.
and the rest of Italy by not being...
Right.
Brutal and forgiving his enemies. And now we can't go past this without talking about this fact, Ray. And in previous episodes, I have alluded somewhat jokingly to the fact that our JC, Julius Caesar,
right,
is the model for the JC that came a century later, a century mm-hmm. and a half later, Jesus Christ. And we've talked about the fact that, you know, both born of a god or descended from gods, anyway.
Right.
Wore a funny looking crown made of plant based material on their head. Mm-hmm. Got stabbed in the side by a guy called Longinus.
Right. Probably the same guy.
Yeah. Or they'd be pretty old. Anyway. Sure. There were some other connections that I can't remember. But here's another one.
Uh huh.
Forgive your enemies, be merciful to your enemies. You know, if somebody slaps you on the cheek, what do?
Right.
Pull your pants back up and you know, stop shooting him a brown eye.
Why'd you pull down your pants in the first place?
Exactly.
You're bringing it on yourself.
Yeah, that's rude. You know, this is, Julius. He is being merciful to his enemies. I mean.
Yes.
Come on, you can't tell me there's not a JC connection there.
Right.
Anyway, so I don't know how you want to start off. I've got some letters from Cicero to Atticus that I wanted to start with. Have you got something you want to start off with before I do that?
Well, yeah, let me just give a quick framework context to this one. So, you know, it's February of 49. Everybody is totally confused. There's very few partisans on each side. Most people are in the middle. They have no idea what's going to happen. They don't want to know. They don't want it to happen, and they don't want to join a side. But they're suddenly confused. Here comes Caesar, who is not doing what Sulla and Marius did. He's not killing. He's pardoning. He's letting go. And he's giving everybody their money back. It's crazy. Now, so not only is he not acting to form, but the supposedly legitimate government of Rome has left Rome. And by all intents and purposes, it looks like they're going to leave Italy. So the legitimate government's leaving. Caesar's not killing people. It's truly, everybody is truly confused and they have no idea what's going on or what's going to happen next.
Well, I'm gonna jump to these excerpts of Cicero's letters to Atticus because we get good feedback on the Cicero letters. I think people enjoy them, and I enjoy them because it gives us context from somebody you know who was kind of on the fence about a lot of this stuff. He didn't know which way to throw himself. But I think to read these, I'm going to need a little bit of Barry White in the background.
Oh my God.
Because these are kind of love letters to Caesar, in a way.
You know, baby, when I... Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'll insert that in post.
Okay.
Observe the man into whose hands we have fallen. How keen he is. How alert. How well prepared. By Jove, if he does not kill anyone and spares the property of those who are so terrified... He will be in high favor. I talk with the tradesmen and farmers. They care for nothing but their lands and houses and money. They've gone right round. They fear the man they trusted and love the man they feared. Mm-hmm. And all this through our own blunders. I am sick to think of it. In a next letter, my preparations are complete. I wait till I can go by the upper sea. I cannot go by the lower at this season. I must start soon lest I be detained. I do not go for Pompey's sake. I have long known him to be the worst of politicians, and I know him now for the worst of generals. I go because I am sneered at by the Optimates. Precious Optimates. What are they about now? Selling themselves to Caesar? The towns receive Caesar as a god. When this Pisistratus does them no harm, they are as grateful to him as if, ugh, shit.
And take three.
Thanks. When this Pisistratus does them no harm, they are as grateful to him as if he had protected them from others. Do you know who Pisistratus is referring to, Ray?
No, who's that?
Pisistratus was a tyrant of Athens in the 6th century, maybe 5th or 6th century BCE.
Oh, Pisistratus, yeah. No, I'm just joking. Go ahead.
Not to be confused with Oscar Pistorius, the disabled Olympian who allegedly get fined guilty. Oh, he shot his wife to death. Didn't mean to do it, though, apparently.
It's just, no pun intended, jump right over that.
What receptions will they not give him? What honours will they not heap upon him? They are afraid, are they? By Hercules, it is Pompey that they are afraid of. Caesar's treacherous clemency enchants them. Who are these Optimates that insist that I must leave Italy while they remain? Let them be who they may. I am ashamed to stay, though I know what to expect. I shall join a man who means not to conquer Italy, but to lay it waste. Ought a man to remain in his country after it has fallen under a tyranny? Ought a man to use any means to overthrow a tyranny, though he may ruin his country in doing it? Ought he not rather to try to mend matters by argument as opportunity offers? Is it right to make war on one's country for the sake of liberty? Should a man adhere at all risks to one party, though he considers them on the whole to have been a set of fools? Is a person who has been his country's greatest benefactor and has been rewarded by envy and ill usage to volunteer into danger for such a party? Do you think he's referring to himself there, the country's greatest benefactor, and has been rewarded with envy and ill usage?
I'm going to go with yes. Hell may, to the yeah.
May he not retire and live quietly with his family and leave public affairs to their fate? I amuse myself as time passes with these speculations. He's calling himself his country's greatest benefactor. Wow, and I thought Pompey had an ego.
Yeah.
Last letter. Pompey is aiming at a monarchy after the type of Sulla. I know what I say. Never did he show his hand more plainly. Has he not a good cause? The very best. But mark me, it will be carried out most foully. He means to strangle Rome and Italy with famine, and then waste and burn the country and seize the property of all who have any. Caesar may do as ill, but the prospect is frightful. The fleets from Alexandria, Colchis, Sidon, Cyprus, Pamphylia, Lycia, Rhodes, Chios, Byzantium will be employed to cut off our supplies, and then Pompey himself will come in his wrath. So, Cicero's view at this stage is that Pompey is the one aiming at a Sullan monarchy and is going to destroy Italy in order to achieve it. Not Caesar, although he says Caesar might be just as bad.
Yeah.
But it's Pompey. And Cicero's gone to be with Pompey. He's chosen Pompey, even though at this stage he believes Pompey is going to be an absolutely brutal tyrant.
Right, but his thinking and the train of thought, the line of thought in that letter is so timeless. You can easily apply it today. You can apply it to World War II, World War I. Anytime when your country's done something you don't agree with, you know, do you get up and leave? Do you stay within the system and try to do something? So that is something that a lot of us are dealing with today, maybe on a much smaller scale. But you wonder, can you still be loyal or love your country when they do stuff that you wouldn't do or you wouldn't see that you wouldn't want seen done. But as far as Cicero goes, I mean, I think what he's going to try and do is try to work from within the system, because in some ways, I guess he doesn't see that he really has a choice, because he's going to try and stay on the fence, keep writing letters to everybody and try to bring Caesar and Pompey together, because he really thought that was the best option as far as ending this before there was some serious bloodshed.
Yeah. Now, fortunately, one thing that was in Cicero's favor at this stage is he got a song written about him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it was one of the things that you did as a member of the Roman elite. You tried to get a top pop star to write a song about you. And particularly if you're an ex-consul, there were always, you know, people were trying to write songs about you to glorify you. He managed to get a little bald, chubby British guy by the name of Aphilius Collinsus to write this little track. Well, Caesar, Cicero.
No, he don't even know my name, but I think she loves me just the same. Cicero.
That's good. That's good. Oh, and what most people don't know, historical fact, when Cicero was finished being consul, he really wanted the name Magnus, found out it was already taken, and he was a little pissed after that, but he did see himself as the greatest thing to come out of Rome since, I don't know, the wheel, the chariot, I have no idea, sliced Roman bread, I'm not sure, but yeah, no, he did value him. He had a healthy ego. Cicero had a healthy ego.
Yeah. Okay, so apparently, like at this stage, particularly when the pardon of Corfinium, the news of that spreads, as Cicero said in these letters, the people, they didn't really care. I think we said in a previous episode who was going to win here. But as soon as they see that Caesar is not being a Sulla or a Marius, they're like, well, shit, dude, let's get on board with the Caesar guy. Even though both Pompey and Caesar were highly respected, they were both seen as great servants of the Republic. But if Caesar had come through and was hacking and slaying and killing and doing all that kind of stuff, they probably would have turned against him. But, you know, he's been very Jesus about it. And they were like, this guy's pretty cool. Let's build a religion around him and change the names.
Right. There we go. Yeah, and he knew what he was doing. And so we quickly get to the race for the coast. So so Pompey's heading down there. Caesar gets – he wastes, what, at least a week, if not more, at the clemency of Corfinium, and he's losing time. So he's got to dash down to try and stop not only Pompey from leaving with those two legions, but also, please, oh, my God, just talk to me for 5 minutes in this tent over here. So he's trying to hurry up and reach him to try and stop him from leaving and to have a conversation with him so they can work everything out.
And remember in a previous episode, Pompey said, all I need to do is stamp my foot and armies will rise up out of Italy. Well, he's been stamping for quite a few weeks now. Yeah. He's thinking something wrong with his batteries and his stamp foot.
My foot's sore. There's not enough men. Well, not only that, because, again, Caesar's not giving him an issue. You know, if there was a rampaging Caesar army going around, that would spur people to join you to stop this monster. But he's not being a monster. He's not playing to form. So the sense of urgency is not there.
Yeah. One senator suggested maybe it was about time that Pompey started stamping his foot a bit harder. So Pompey decides, as we said in the last episode, he says to Bugalugs, Ahenobarbus at Corfinium, I'm not coming. Sorry. So he gives up three legions there, which he knew he couldn't defend, and he managed to concentrate the remainder of the forces that he has at a place called Brundisium, which is modern Brindisi, on the coast of Italy. Now, the Latin name Brundisium, do you know what it means, Ray? How's your Latin?
About a broom and I'm dizzy. No, I'm probably off. Go ahead. What is it?
It means deer's head. Brundisium, deer's head. And if you look at an aerial shot of the harbour at Brundisium, it looks like a deer's head.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, that is cool, but I always have the question, how did they know?
Yeah. Did they get in a hot air balloon? No.
Exactly. Who was taking aerial footage of the harbor so they knew it looked like a deer's head?
I know this one. The Royal Air Force.
It was aliens. It had to be aliens.
Oh, aliens. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Aliens came down and said, hey, by the way, your harbor looks like a deer's head.
And actually, the aliens are the answer to most questions. But I'm sorry, please continue.
No, I'm with you on that. Now, there are two ancient Roman columns today in Brindisi, and on our Rome tour 2015, middle of this year, we may go and visit Brindisi, and then again, we may not. We don't know. But these two columns were once thought to mark the ending points of the Appian Way, but then it turns out they're not really. They were just like a port reference for ancient mariners. They could see these columns and go, okay, well, that's like it was like a lighthouse, right?
That's right. Oh, we're getting too close. Or whatever. Yeah.
Or head in that direction or something like that.
We want to go there, right?
Yeah.
So Caesar, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I got more. Shut the hell up, man. I got more on Brindisi. Ouch. If you want to know when Brindisi is, ladies and gentlemen, think about the boot of Italy. You know what that looks like. There's a boot. There's the heel of the boot. It's on the back of the heel, just up a little bit, like an inch.
Right.
Just up from the back of the heel.
So if you had like a 3-inch heel shoes.
Yeah.
No, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You need to be worried about Ray's boot. You keep talking to me like that. No, I was just going to say that Caesar was able to dash down there, and he made it by March the 9th. Pompey's already there. Now, Caesar has been working hard. He's got six legions with him. He's got the 8th, the 12th, the 13th, the newly created 5th legion, and some other ones which we don't know about. And so, but again, he's not there to fight. He's not there to have his men take out the swords and start whacking away at the enemy, because that is just bad PR. Instead, they whip out their shovels or whatever, their staves or whatever they're called, shovels. And what it is they're trying to block off the harbor before Pompey, who's gathered his men and all the senators and all the other people who've come with him to try and sell out the harbor. Pompey has confiscated all the ships in the area and he's about to sell out. So he's trying to widen the harbor. Caesar's men are trying to close off the harbor. So there's this weird engineering Roman race going on. But while this is going on, Caesar is still sending letters to Pompey. Hey, please come and talk to me. We can work this out. This does not have to go down like this. I don't know what the Latin is for go down like this, but this does not have to go down like this. And we can work this out. But as we said before, if he talks to Caesar, he loses what respect he has, and it's probably not much, with all the optimates and the boni.
I'm sure our friend Shinong will be able to tell us what the Latin for go down on you. What did you say? Go down on you?
Yeah, no.
Go down like this. Go down like this.
Oh, and I have to say this real quick, totally different subject. I'm talking to Jessica about making those coffee mugs, Caesar and the Pirates. She literally texted me and said, do you want to watch me while I draw? And I'm thinking she meant, do I want to see the sketches? But I'm going to just hit a big old yes. So if you lose me anywhere in this recording, it's because I'm doing something better. Okay.
Oh, there's so many things that are wrong with that. The fact that I said go down on you and then you immediately jumped to Jessica and then watching her. Oh.
I'm connected.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jessica.
And my mother-in-law, Anne, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Heather.
Yeah.
Heather listened to the show. She likes everything on Facebook. But
She does. I pay her to do that. But I know her mother listens. Her mother is a huge fan and listens all the time. So, sorry.
Hi, Heather's mother. Getting back to the port here, then the deer's head. Trying to give people a visual here. So imagine a deer head looking straight at you.
Right.
Two big thing of horns, or actually better than a deer head. Imagine like an ox's head. So you've got the big horns coming out, and then a head and a really skinny neck. Well, that's the harbour of Brundisium. So the skinny neck is the harbour out to the ocean, and that's what they're trying to block. Caesar's trying to block it. Mm-hmm. Remember why Pompey's here, of course. Pompey's trying to get the hell out of Italy because he needs to go to where he has troops. He needs to get to Spain. He needs to get to Greece. He needs to get to Egypt. He needs to get to all of these other places where he thinks he can raise armies. Right. And Caesar's obviously trying to stop him. So Caesar's guys are building what they call booms, which are like pontoon barriers at the mouth of the port. I've actually got, I'll read from Di Bello Civili, Civili Caesar's commentaries on this, because he goes into a lot of detail, as he likes to do.
Yes.
The plan of his work was as follows. Where the mouth of the port was narrowest, he threw up a mole.
Mole.
Of earth on either side, because in these places the sea was shallow. Having gone out so far that the mole could not be continued in the deep water, he fixed double floats 30 feet on either side before the mole. These he fastened with four anchors at the four corners that they might not be carried away by the waves. Having completed and secured them, he then joined to them other floats of equal size. Now, I don't know about you, but question in my mind is, what were these floats made out of? How did you make a float?
Right.
What do you think they're made out of?
Is it like a hollow, like a canoe almost? Is it a hollowed out? I don't know.
I mean, was it like leather or wood? I don't know. Somebody get Caesar on the phone and ask him.
You see, either one, time machine. Two, hopefully we can find out on the tour.
Ah, yes, if we go to Brindisi.
Yes.
These he covered with earth and mold that he might not be prevented from access to them to defend them. And in the front and on both sides, he protected them with a parapet of wicker work, and on every fourth one raised a turret 2 stories high to secure them the better from being attacked by the shipping and set on fire. So that's what Caesar's doing at the mouth of the port. To counteract this, he says, Pompey fitted out large merchant ships, which he found in the harbour of Brundusium. On them he erected turrets 3 stories high, and having furnished them with several engines and all sorts of weapons, drove them among Caesar's works to break through the floats and interrupt the works. Thus there happened skirmishes every day at a distance with slings, arrows, and other weapons.
Damn.
To be or not to be.
Yeah.
Slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
Right. Oh, I was saying you get an arrow in the eye.
What's that got to do with Hamlet, man?
Not Hamlet. I moved on to Philip, Alexander's father.
Yeah, well, okay.
Let's see if one of those could take an eye and go, no, keep going.
Oh, yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
I'll be okay. Keep digging.
So yeah, they're working hard here to counteract this. I mean, imagine being there to watch this. Caesar, it's like a race. Caesar's trying to build this thing. Pompey's trying to build this thing. They're shooting at each other's. It's awesome.
Crazy. Yeah.
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 And now, as you say, Caesar's like, hey, Pompey, let's sit down. Pompey's like, just ignoring him.
Can't hear you.
La, 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 la.
But Caesar's got a lot more men. Caesar's got a lot more men. So Pompey, besides not being allowed to talk to his, he can't go out and play with Caesar. He's got to get the heck out of there. So he's able to, because we joke a lot about Pompey, especially compared to Caesar, or anybody compared to Caesar. But Pompey, when he is not in his own head, is a competent military man, and he's able to slip out on the night of March 16th. He's able to distract Caesar. He's able to slip out. And just to show how good he is, all but two of his ships make it out. Those two got caught on the boom. And so for all intents and purposes, Pompey gets away with almost all of his troops, all of the senators and whatever, ex-consuls or whatever that are coming with him. So Pompey's able to slip out. He's heading to Greece, and he's got a good start. And Caesar fails in what he was trying to do. He did not talk to Pompey, and he was not able to stop him from leaving.
And the townsfolk in Brundisium apparently didn't think much of Pompey. And you can imagine what they must have thought about the fact that he was trying to escape.
Right. Like, he's Are you running away?
Yeah, Caesar's a bad guy. Well, you going to fight him? Not right now.
Over there.
I'm going to leave you to him while I run away. And they've also obviously heard about Corfinium here. So according to Caesar in his commentaries, the people of Brundisium, irritated by the insolence of Pompey's soldiers and the insults received from Pompey himself, were in favor of Caesar's party. Therefore, as soon as they were aware of Pompey's departure, while his men were running up and down and busied about their voyage, they made signs from the tops of the houses. Caesar, being apprised of the design by them, ordered scaling ladders to be got ready and his men to take arms, that he might not lose any opportunity of coming to action.
Right.
So the people are, you know, going, oh, Caesar, come on. Come on in now.
That's okay.
Leaving.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course, Caesar couldn't follow because he really didn't have a fleet of ships and he had other things to do.
Yeah. And I just think it's great that so here's the camera angle. Picture a camera right behind Caesar over his shoulder watching the last ship leave. And he's got his hand extended. Pompey, come back to me. And his hand slowly lowers and he's sad. But by all this time.
Single tear drops from his face.
That's right. But by the time the ships are gone and Caesar's like, okay, what's next? It's now mid-March and the weather is warming up. And this is, you know, despite what Caesar's done for the last 2 or 3 years, now we are getting into the proper campaigning season. So it's sad. He missed out, but he's got shit to do. So Caesar's got, as he always does, he, you know, turns the page and says, what's next?
Now, Caesar figures that he needs to get to Spain because that's where most of Pompey's troops were going to be.
Yeah.
The question is, does he need a fleet of ships to get there or can he just march? Now, we know that Caesar doesn't mind the forced march.
Right.
But, you know, Spain's a long way away from Italy.
He's down at the very end, the very end of Italy. He's got to go all the way back up. Wow, that's just, I can do that. I can do that in the snow.
And well, but mind you, most of Caesar's legions are still north of the Alps.
Right. He's got 7 legions up there. Yeah.
So maybe, you know, they can get to Spain faster than he can. But, you know, he can march from the boot of Italy right up to the top, across France, down past, you know, the Côte d'Azur, Marseille, Cannes, stop in at the Cannes Film Festival, go to Marseille. The fish apparently good in Marseille, according to the Milo.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Milo said the fish were pretty good in Marseille.
Yum.
Stop there, have a meal with Milo, talk about old times. Right. Then head over the border into Spain, go to Barcelona, where the amazing composer of our Alexander theme song, Joffrey yes. lives. Oh, sorry, Joffrey. Not enough coffee.
They're just going to give him a nickname or something. But yeah, Joffrey, yes. Awesome music for the Alexander show.
Yes. And into Spain.
Right.
So that's something that he's thinking about right now. Well, okay, we've got to get there as quickly as possible.
Yeah. But he's got business. He got business to deal with, and it's called politics. Pompey might have left Rome, and he might have let it rudderless, and most of the people that matter are gone. But Caesar is a Roman after all, and he cares about the Roman Republic and the city. And so he's got to go there and put things to rights. Plus, he's got to kind of, due to the best of his ability, legitimize what he has done and what he is going to do.
Just getting back to Spain, there's this apparently Caesar joke that he was going to go to Spain to fight an army without a general, and then he would deal with a general without an army. Because Pompey had gone to Greece. Why Pompey didn't go to Spain, I don't really understand. Do you have any idea why he didn't go to Spain? Why did he go to Greece?
From what I gather, those seven legions were not veteran. They hadn't had any fights. And so you can have a bunch of guys, but if they don't have any experience, you're not going to last very long. But Pompey, because of his time in the East, truly had millions, and I do mean millions of clients. He had kings that were clients. And when a king is your client, everybody, all his subjects are your clients. So he truly was almost a demigod, if you will, or a god in the East. And so people there, they've heard of Caesar. They don't know anything about him, but they adore/fear Pompey. That's where his true power base is at.
So he thinks he's better off going there rather than going
absolutely.
Skilling up his legions in Spain.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Caesar, by the way, is also sending Curio, who hated his guts until Caesar paid off his debts and now is his best mate.
Yes.
He's sending him down to Sicily to make sure that it continued to ship its surplus crops up to Italy, because, of course, this is one of the things that Pompey's going to try and do, according to Cicero, is blockade Italy's grain supply and starve them out.
Yeah.
So, as you say, Caesar's now got to take control of some business. He's got control of all of Italy.
God, hold on. You have to hear this. You know that song, Jesus Take the Wheel? This is Caesar Take the Wheel of Rome. Came to me. Sorry.
I don't know that song.
Oh, well, in America, you know, Caesar Take the Wheel, it's huge. So that's going to be our new song. But anyway, please go ahead.
Okay. So Caesar's taken control of all of Italy and hasn't had really a single battle he's had to fight. Not a single walled town or city resisted him. Right. You know, there was a couple of minor skirmishes, but basically he's taken it without firing a single shot. And that, of course, reminds me of Napoleon. when Napoleon, for people who haven't listened to the Napoleon show.
Why haven't you?
When Napoleon returns from his first exile on the island of Elba, which is just off the coast of Italy, he returns and takes back the throne of Paris again without firing a single shot, because the people were basically happy to have him back, as were the soldiers. They were like, oh, Napoleon, yay.
Hey.
Yay. So, yeah, he famously retook France without having to fire a single shot, and this is just like Caesar. He would have been happy about that, just like Caesar. Now, Caesar wants the Senate to meet to kind of give the impression that everything's normal.
Business as usual.
That's no one panic.
Nothing to see here. Go back to Rome.
And he tries to convince Cicero to come and be part of this. Cicero's still in Italy at this stage. He hasn't run off to be with Pompey. And there's a series of letters between Cicero and Caesar where Caesar's like, come on, dude, it'll be all right.
Cicero's
like, hey, look, it's not going to look good. And you're just going to trick me. You're going to trick me. You're going to make me, you know, give up my loyalties. Anyway, they basically they end up having a meeting. One of the things that Caesar's using to try and convince Cicero that he's a friend still is that he's gonna back the idea of Cicero having a triumph.
Yes.
People will remember that he was a governor. He was sent by Pompey, Cicero, to be governor of Cilicia, which I've apparently found out it's pronounced, which is the southeastern coast of modern Turkey. He was the governor of that. He'd done a reasonable job, won a minor victory against the tribes there.
Hey.
And he wanted a triumph.
Really, really wanted it.
Yeah, because he's an egomaniac, as we've discovered with Cicero.
Well, he's a great lawyer. He's known for his speeches. He's already been consul. I mean, he's never been a military man in his whole life. And now there's a chance for him to get a triumph. He desperately, desperately wants this.
And who doesn't want him to have it?
Cato, son of a bitch, Cato.
Who does Cato want to give the triumph to?
That son of a bitch wants to give it to son of a bitch, Bibulus, for losing the damn war that he fought in the first place.
And Bibulus is, of course, his son-in-law.
Yeah, his family. His family. Yeah. So Cicero's like, wait, and Cicero didn't lead the troops. Come on, let's be honest. He's like, my men won a battle. Bibulus' men lost a battle. And you want to give that short little SOB a fucking triumph and not me? Hell to the no. And again, I don't know what Latin is for hell to the no, but he desperately wanted his triumph. And Caesar's like, absolutely, absolutely. Congratulations. And I think you should have it, Cicero. Won't you come to Rome?
Yeah. The Senate had already voted previously that Cicero should have a public thanksgiving, which was usually what came before a triumph. But Pompey has been telling him that he supports the idea of a triumph. Now, Caesar is saying, triumph, it's all good. Come back, you know, support what I'm doing, and I'll make sure you get a triumph. But, you know, Cicero's not convinced.
Yeah. He's got some principles. He's got that little voice in the back of his head going, no, you'll be a sellout. But the other part, and I did not know this. I've studied Caesar for decades, and I did not know this up until reading for this. Caesar had loaned Cicero some money. I had no idea that. So Cicero's like, well, if I stay and I give him what he wants, it looks like I've been bought. But if I leave and fight him, it looks like I'm trying to renege on paying him back. So he truly does have this struggle in his own mind and his soul and his and whatever you want to call it. But he truly does not know what to do. But there's that little voice saying, no, you can't go to Rome. You can't listen to Caesar, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And the other thing that's complicating it is Cicero still has his proconsular imperium.
Yes.
Because he can't lay that down until he gets his triumph approved.
He's being followed by lictors.
He's got lictors. He has the right to command troops.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's complicated here, which way he's going to fall. Does he give up his imperium? He gets a letter from Caesar, probably early March, where Caesar says, have no doubt that I have many times been grateful to you and look forward to having even more reason to be grateful to you in the future. This is no more than you deserve. First, though, I implore you, since I expect that I shall swiftly come to Rome, that I may see you there and draw on your counsel, goodwill, dignity, and assistance of every kind. Mm-hmm. I will close as I began. Please excuse my haste and the brevity of this letter. And Cicero, being a dick, replies back saying, what do you mean by goodwill and insistence exactly?
Expand on assistance.
He says
that little voice,
He says he'd be willing to work for peace as long as it protected, quote, our mutual friend Pompey. Caesar writes back around about the 26th, thanking Cicero for commending his clemency, which Cicero has obviously heard about at this stage, saying there is nothing further from my nature than cruelty.
Yeah.
Okay, I chopped off the hands of thousands of people at Uxulodunum, but really?
I don't like hands. I just don't. There's hands have always bothered me. I don't know what it is. But Yeah, that's the farthest thing from my nature.
That wasn't cruel. They go backwards and forwards with a bunch of letters. They end up meeting, not in Rome, but at Formiae, and they have a little chit-chat.
Pow-wow.
Mm.
Little stop and chat. And I just love the way with Cicero's, I mean, again, you got to give Cicero some credit. He's sitting there going, look, well, I believe this, and I think this, and I'm going to say this, this, and this. And Caesar's like, oh, well, yeah, no, I don't want you to say all that. He goes, but I would have to. If I come to Rome, I have to say what I think is the truth, and you don't want to hear me say that. So I can't go to Rome because I will say it. I know me. I've lived with me for a long time. I will end up saying this. And Caesar's like, yeah, I don't want to hear you say that.
Cicero writes to, I think, again, Atticus, he kept saying that my refusal was a condemnation of him, which would make others less likely to come if I did not go. After a lot of talk, Caesar said, well, come then and talk about peace. As a free agent, I asked. He said, should I tell you what to say? In that case, I said, I will argue that the Senate cannot approve your taking an army to Spain or transporting one to Greece. And more than that, I went on, I shall deplore Pompey's fate. So then he said, I really do not want you to say that. That's what
really,
I thought.
Really.
But I do not want to go there because I will either have to say that and more besides, about which I cannot hold my tongue if I am present, or else I cannot go. Caesar goes, look, dude, just sleep on it. Think it over. But then apparently Caesar says to him, if Cicero will not advise him, he would seek guidance from others. Mm-hmm. Which Cicero took as a bit of a threat.
Right.
So all broke down. Cicero decides, yeah, if I go there and say what I have to say as a man of integrity who wants a triumph, who borrowed a lot. I don't know if you finished the borrowing money story before, but Cicero decided to pay it back out of the money that he borrowed,
that's right,
as the proconsul of Turkey, Kilikia. Yeah, so he decides he has to spend pretty much everything that he's got.
Oh, man.
To pay off the loan that Caesar gave him so he can then fight him with good conscience or support Pompey with good conscience.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something. I don't know.
I mean, I respected that a hell of a lot more than what Pompey does. I mean, I get why Pompey left, but just to literally leave everything and, you know, because Pompey said, whoever stays, and he's talking about the average Joe on the street, whoever stays, you know, you're a partisan of Caesar's, you're not with us. So, it's just, you know, he should have found another way.
And you'll be punished, basically.
Yes, he
threatens the general population that if they stay, what are they supposed to do? I mean, seriously.
I'm a guy with 14 kids. I got a pitchfork. I shovel shit. What am I supposed to do? That's like when Hitler's about to kill himself. He goes, I want all of Germany destroyed. Oh, yeah. Heil Hitler. We'll get right on that for you. You just go back there and down in your bunker. So, but, you know, you just got to wonder, what are these people thinking?
Yeah. I mean, just the difference in how Caesar treats everyone and Pompey treats everyone says a lot about their character.
Absolutely.
So the Senate meets. Not many people turn up, particularly all the people that matter.
That's right.
All the patricians, all the big wigs. Sure. But, you know, Caesar takes advantage of this as much as he can. He talks about, again, the fact, look, I don't want any trouble. I just want what's coming to me. These guys are my enemies are the bad guys. I'm the good guy. All I want is justice. I tried to negotiate with Pompey, but he wouldn't have it. He wouldn't even meet with me. Caesar makes his case, and not just to the Senate, but he also goes to the Consilium Plebis, the People's Assembly, People's Council, and he repeats the same things to them. He says, look, guys, you know, this isn't about anything except justice. You know me. You know me. I've always been the popularity. I'm the guy
on the street. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about making life better for you. Hey, by the way, not only am I going to make sure you get the grain that you need, because Pompey's trying to starve you out, everybody's going to get 300 sesterce. Every citizen. 300 sesterce on me.
Yeah.
Just for being, you know, so apologies for the trouble you've been through and the, you know, the worry and all that. Here's a gift, $300, everyone. Yeah.
Actually, that's slightly inaccurate. He
said fiscal stimulus.
Exactly. So first of all, he meets outside the Pomerium, again, respecting that. And he says, all I want is the freaking law of 52 BCE, the law of the tribunes, saying that I can run in absentia. That is all I ever wanted. By the way, everybody gets a new car. And of course, no one knew what he was talking about. So he says, okay, no.
Look under your seat.
That's right. That's right. No, I meant to say 300 sesterce. I'm sorry. So, yeah. So, so again, the people, even though he's doing all this and he hasn't killed anybody, the people, you know, rightly so, they're very wary. They're all, yeah, we're going to get grain. We're going to get some money. Please don't kill us. They're still waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Now, the only guy who's causing trouble for him in Rome now is Lucius Caecilius Metellus. God damn these Metelluses.
They're all over the place.
Who's one of the tribunes.
They actually is a very large family branch. So, yes, they are all over the place. And I do mean that literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is this the same guy who was married to Caesar's niece and Caesar tried to go? Is this another Metellus? I can't remember my
Metelluses. I think this is a different one.
This isn't the guy who said, hey, Pompey, here's a sword. And then, said,
whoa, you people are crazy. I don't think this is that. Metellus.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think this is the guy that was consul in 68 and is now a tribune. Anyway.
Yeah.
No, it couldn't be him. That guy died as a consul in 68. Ignore that.
Ignore that. Scratch,
ignore that. Yep. So many Lucius Caecilius Metellus. Yeah. Anyway, this guy says, Caesar decides, the Senate ran away. Before they could actually take the money out of the state treasury.
I love that.
Yeah. Remember, they were going to take it, and then somebody said, Caesar's about to go. They were like,
shit. Yeah.
They left the money. So Caesar decides, there's money there, man. I'm going to use it. And Metellus tries to stop him. Now, there are a couple of different versions of this, but the version that I like the most is that the consuls had left the door locked and barred, took the key.
At least they remembered that.
Yeah, but Caesar sends some guys with axes and goes, chop the door down.
Because Metellus, every time Caesar opens his mouth or votes on something, Metellus has been interposing his veto, and that's his right as a tribune. But now Caesar can't really worry about the rules. He can't play by the rules right now. He's got to fight in Greece, North Africa, and Spain. He's got to watch the Gauls, and he's got to now give every citizen 300 sesterce. He needs a lot of money, and he's got a lot of money, but it's not all in ready cash. When you got to fund a war practically all over the Roman Republic, you need all the treasury that's coming from Rome. He has to have this money.
And he put a lot of the money in there from Gaul,
absolutely,
too, you know?
Absolutely.
Apparently Crassus once boasted that only a man who could raise an army from his own resources could truly call himself rich.
Yeah. Caesar was rich, but...
Imagine that in this day and age. Who could pay for, you know, the U.S. Army out of their own pocket?
Murdoch would have a kick-ass army. They would have the latest weapons. They'd all be addicted to some drug that he controlled, like the Jemadar. It would be freaking awesome.
Yeah. And Bill Gates's army would be full of guys with glasses and dandruff pocket protectors.
That's right. Always pushing the glasses up. Well, you know. Actually, that's true. So we can all beat them up. But go ahead.
In one version of this story, getting back to Metellus and the treasury, Metellus stands in front of the door and says, I'm not going to let you in. And Caesar says that, I'll just kill you if you don't get out of the way.
Right.
But Caesar then says that he declared it was harder for a man of his natural clemency to make such a threat than it would be for him actually to do the deed.
Right. When I said I was going to bury that axe in your fucking skull if you don't move out of the way, I was just blown off steam. I'm sorry. I've had a busy, bad day. I'm sorry. I really wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to do it. Sorry.
It saying that hurts me than it hurt more than it hurts you, kind of thing. Because I'm a man of natural clemency. I'm That's a good right. guy at heart.
That's right.
Now, of course, Caesar apparently doesn't even mention this in the commentaries.
Ooh. Ooh.
And one of the books I was reading says that's evidence of his bad conscience, that yeah. he just skips over this whole thing.
Yeah. He just says backspace. Yeah.
Yeah, he just says, oh, I just took the money. But I don't exactly know where this account of Metellus blocking the door comes from and why it's right. more credible than Caesar's commentaries, but the story was passed down somehow. Yeah. Now, Caesar apparently takes 15,000 gold bars, 30,000 silver bars, no less than 30 million sesterci, plus...
And?
He takes the special fund that had been there... for hundreds of years, since we mentioned in a recent episode that the Gauls had attacked Rome in 390 BCE, and they kept a special fund there to defend themselves against a Gallic attack, maybe to buy in mercenaries or maybe just to buy off the Gauls.
Yeah, yeah.
He takes that as well. He goes, well, we're not going to ever need that again because Gaul's done, man. I did that.
I did that. So thank you, cha-ching. So, yeah, so it's been building out for hundreds of years. Yeah, I'll just take that too. Oh my God! So now he's cash rich. He can start affording all the things that he's promised and the stuff that he knows is coming in the future. He really wanted to stop Pompey because now he knows this is going to take at least a year. He's got to go to Spain, which is going to give Pompey time to train his troops. He's going to have to deal with that. So he tried to nip it in the bud. He couldn't. He knows this is going to drag on for a while. So he needs all this cash and probably eventually more besides.
It's his first time back in Rome after 9 years.
He goes back to the bank, yeah.
Stays a couple of weeks and then heads off to join up with his army in Spain, leaves Mark Antony in charge of Italy. Now, no mention anywhere of a booty call in this. He's been away for 9 years. He's got a wife. Who's his wife at this stage? I can't even remember. One with his with at the end.
Oh God, I'm told Wikipedia the hell out of that right now.
You know I am, dude.
Yeah, yeah. No, but see, yeah,
yeah, yeah. No,
I was just gonna say that leaving Mark Antony in charge turns out to be one of the top two or three fucked up moves that Caesar does. Caesar's gonna have to come back and put out a lot of fires because Mark Antony's just gonna go, oh, it is a party going on when Caesar leaves. So he's gonna really screw things up, and Caesar's got to fix a lot of things that Mark Antony's going to mess up.
Yeah. Now, he's married to Calpurnia.
Calpurnia! Oh!
Calpurnia, who had the unfortunate surname of Pisonis. You know, yeah, no wonder she wanted to get married, change her last name.
Please, I'll marry anybody.
Yeah, I talk about golden showers. Calpurnia Pisonis. He married her in 59, which is when he went to Gaul.
Right.
Yeah. So he hasn't seen his wife for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's back in Rome for the first time. And there's no mention of a booty call. He doesn't say in the commentaries, by the way, I got back to Rome and went to see my beloved wife. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is.
Or Sevilla. Yeah. No mention of Sevilla.
Busy, busy man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Well, that's all we're going to do today. Just an hour-long show today. It's actually leftover notes that we didn't get to when we did episode 29. Not going to do any iTunes reviews because we just did them a few days ago. I think we'll leave it a bit longer. We've done the patrons. Plug Rome 2015 again. We're actually firming up the details of the Rome tour now, guys. So if you want to get in on it, go to lifeofcaesar.com/Rome2015 and fill out the form there. Let us know that you are interested. It's not a confirmation. It's just an indicative. We're looking at pricing, and it's going to come down to days and where we go.
Yeah.
By the way,
the
sort of rough agenda that we're working on at the moment is flying into Paris. So you'll have to get your own way to Paris.
Right.
We'll meet in Paris. Spend a day or so in Paris. I'll take you to Napoleon's tomb. We'll see a couple of Napoleonic sites. We have to go to the Louvre and see some Napoleonic stuff there. We'll go to Napoleon's tomb. If you know, we can work it in. I'd love to do Malmaison, which is about a half-hour bus ride out of Paris CBD, which is where he lived with Josephine. Wow. We might stop at Versailles on the way out of Paris. But anyway, we'll leave Paris. Then we'll go to Alesia.
Got to go to Alesia.
Go to Alesia. We'll see the museum to the Siege of Alesia there, which looks absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Once we've done Alesia, this kind of depends on time and budget and different things. What I'd love to do is then catch the Eurorail down to Nice on the coast of France, catch the ferry from Nice over to Ajaccio on the island of Corsica, which is Napoleon's birthplace. Now, you might be going, Napoleon, I thought this was a Caesar tour. It is, but seeing as we're going to go
there, come on.
Yeah, we're going to go to Alesia, which is near Paris. We figured, hey, we might as well do some Napoleonic sites while we're there. Even if you don't give a shit about Napoleon, you've never listened to the Napoleon show, this gives you an opportunity to do that. Yeah, and this is amazing. And Ajaccio is a beautiful place. I met my lovely wife there as well, so it's special for us. But it's just this beautiful little Mediterranean island, cobbled streets, amazing, you know, cafes overlooking mountains and a bay. Wow. It's so picturesque. It's amazing.
I was just going to say, if I could take it in a different direction, while we're on the Euro or whatever, the train going down the coast to the coast, if anybody wants to join me, what I'm going to do is jump off the train as it's moving and try to hit. There's a section along that area of what's left of the French defense line, the Maginot line from World War II. So that would be, if we in any way can stop the train, or like I said, if it slows down around a turn, I would jump off, check that out, get our pictures, you know, and then jump back on the train and head.
We'll do a hold up. I'll take a gun and hold it to the head of the driver and say, stop the train.
Thank you for that.
While Ray and a bunch of you are funneling the elements we need to make crystal meth out of the carriages up the back.
I was going
to
leave that as a surprise, but okay, yeah.
So we do a day or so in Ajaccio, then catch a ferry from Ajaccio. We'll have to catch a bus from Ajaccio up to the other coast of Corsica, and then catch a ferry over to Livorno, which is on the coast of Italy. From Livorno, we probably want to go to Florence because it's absolutely nothing to do with Caesar or Napoleon. But it's Florence, man. If you're going to be in the region of Florence, you've got to go to Firenze. It's beautiful. We'll climb up the staircase to the top of the Duomo. We'll have espresso in Florence. Nice. It's beautiful, right? You've been to Florence before, man?
No. I've been to Rome and I've been to Assisi, but not to Florence. And I just want everybody else to know that once I'm either inebriated or I'm out of breath, I'm going to point at every freaking waterway. I say, oh, look, the Rubicon. Oh, look, the Rubicon, and just keep that going all day long. So I can't wait to do that.
That'll be fucking annoying, yeah.
no, isn't it?
Yeah. So after we go to Florence, I think we might, again, we'll be on probably on a bus or Eurorail, depending. Mm-hmm. We'll head down towards Rome. We'll go to Arezzo that we mentioned just the other day. We have to go to see the Piazza Arezzo or something. Or we might go via Siena just because it's pretty. And then we make our way down to Rome, and then we do a couple of days in Rome. We see you know, we go to the Forum, we go to some of the museums. Well, that's of course again when we're in Florence, we're going to go see the Statue of David. You know, we're going to go see some of the artwork in Florence because, you know, this isn't just all about Caesar. This is about
a chance
culture.
To just see some of the amazing things in the world.
Yeah, hanging out with Ray and Cam doing culture. Right. We're going to go do the museums and the art galleries. So we go down to Rome and then we'll do some similar stuff there. We'll see some of the ruins. We'll do some art galleries. We'll just do that, hang out, have a good time. Then if we get time, we may go over to Brindisi, but that's a big drive down to the boot.
Right. If we get a chance.
Yeah, but you probably want to fly out of Rome anyway, and that's going to take a couple of days just to get down to Brindisi, I think. And that's it.
Yeah. Oh, just to let everybody know, and I'm not bragging, but once we get to the Forum, all the guys that are dressed as centurions are probably, hey, Ray, because they probably remember me from last time. So just be prepared for that, okay?
Well, they'll go, hey, it's Philip the Great. He got his eye back. At this stage, that's the rough plan of the Rome tour.
Yes.
We need about 15 to 20 people to make it work. I think we've got about dozen people that have expressed interest.
Yes, a dozen emails so far. Yep.
It's probably going to be a week and a half, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to cost you $3,000-$3,500 US for travel and hotels and those sorts of things. Plus, you've got to get yourself into Paris and out of Rome back to your hometown. So, it's a big deal, but, we think it's going to be a trip you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. If we're not arrested, you will remember this.
And if they are arrested, what, they'll forget? Because they'll be given mind-altering drugs? Yeah, right, yeah. It's going to be an absolute hoot. So there you go. So if that sounds like fun and you want to come along, go to the website I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's it, man.
What's the plural Latin for goodbye? See, we need that as well.
Oh, isn't that salvetta? No, the salvetta is hello.
Maybe if you say salvetta backwards.
Doesn't Rome blow up if you do that?
If you say, yeah.
It's valette. Vale or valette for the plural, of course.
Valette.
Valette, everybody. Thank you.